That was it. We rose to within 10 or 15 meters of the surface and stopped, suspended there. Through the port, I could see the surface above, shimmering like a mirror of hammered silver. I wondered what it would be like to be a fish and have a definite roof over your world. I watched another ship splash in. It made a great cloud of bubbles and turbulence, then fell, slightly tail first, for a short distance before large bags popped out under each delta wing. Then it bobbed up to about our level and stayed.
"This is Captain Stott. Now listen carefully. There is a beach some 28 clicks from your present position in the direction of the enemy. You will be proceeding to this beach by scout ship, and from there will mount your assault on the Torin position."
That was some improvement. We'd only have to walk 80 clicks. We deflated the bags, blasted to the surface, and flew in a slow, spread-out formation to the beach. It took several minutes. As the ship scraped to a halt, I could hear pumps humming, making the cabin pressure equal to the air pressure outside. Before it had quite stopped moving, the escape slot beside my couch slid open. I rolled out onto the wing of the craft and jumped to the ground. 10 seconds to find cover. I sprinted across loose gravel to the tree line, a twisty bramble of tall, sparse, bluish-green shrubs. I dove into the briar patch and turned to watch the ships leave. The drones that were left rose slowly to about 100 meters, then took off in all directions with a bone-jarring roar. The real scout ships slid slowly back into the water. Maybe that was a good idea. It wasn't a terribly attractive world, but certainly would be easier to get around in than the cryogenic nightmare we were trained for. The sky was a uniform, dull silver brightness that merged with the mist over the ocean so completely it was impossible to tell where the water ended and air began. Small wavelets licked at the black gravel shore, much too slow and graceful in the 3/4 Earth-normal gravity. Even from 50 meters away, the rattle of billions of pebbles rolling with the tide was loud in my ears. The air temperature was 79 degrees centigrade, not quite hot enough for the sea to boil, even though the air pressure was low compared to Earth's. Wisps of steam drifted quickly upward from the line where water met land. I wondered how a lone man would survive exposed here without a suit. Would the heat or the low oxygen, partial pressure 1/8 Earth normal, kill him first? Or was there some deadly microorganism that would beat them both?
"This is Cortez. Everybody come over and assemble on me."
He was standing on the beach a little to the left of me, waving his hand in a circle over his head. I walked toward him through the shrubs. They were brittle, unsubstantial, seemed paradoxically dried out in the steamy air. They wouldn't offer much in the way of cover.
"We'll be advancing on a heading 0.05 radians east of north. I want Platoon 1 to take point. 2 and 3 follow about 20 meters behind to the left and right. 7, command platoon, is in the middle, 20 meters behind 2 and 3. 5 and 6 bring up the rear in a semicircular closed flank. Everybody straight?"
Sure, we could do that arrowhead maneuver in our sleep.
"Okay, let's move out."
I was in Platoon 7, the command group. Captain Stott put me there not because I was expected to give any commands, but because of my training in physics. The command group was supposedly the safest place, buffered by 6 platoons. People were assigned to it because there was some tactical reason for them to survive at least a little longer than the rest. Cortez was there to give orders. Chavez was there to correct suit malfunctions. The senior medic, Doc Wilson, the only medic who actually had an M.D., was there, and so was Theodopoulos, the radio engineer, our link with the captain, who had elected to stay in orbit. The rest of us were assigned to the command group by dint of special training or aptitude that wouldn't normally be considered of a tactical nature. Facing a totally unknown enemy, there was no way of telling what might prove important. Thus, I was there because I was the closest the company had to a physicist. Rogers was biology, Tate was chemistry. Ho could crank out a perfect score on the Rhine extrasensory perception test every time. Bohrs was a polyglot, able to speak 21 languages fluently, idiomatically. Petrov's talent was that he had tested out to have not one molecule of xenophobia in his psyche. Keating was a skilled acrobat. Debbie Hollister, Lucky Hollister, showed a remarkable aptitude for making money, and also had a consistently high Rhine potential. Chapter 12. When we first set out, we were using the jungle camouflage combination on our suits. But what passed for jungle in these anemic tropics was too sparse. We looked like a band of conspicuous harlequins trooping through the woods. Cortez had us switch to black, but that was just as bad, as the light of Epsilon came evenly from all parts of the sky, and there were no shadows except ours. We finally settled on the dun-colored desert camouflage. The nature of the countryside changed slowly as we walked north away from the sea. The thorn stalks, I guess you could call them trees, came in fewer numbers, but were bigger around and less brittle. At the base of each was a tangled mass of vine with the same blue-green color, which spread out in a flattened cone some 10 meters in diameter. There was a delicate green flower the size of a man's head near the top of each tree. Grass began to grow some 5 clicks from the sea. It seemed to respect the tree's property rights, leaving a strip of bare earth around each cone of vine. At the edge of such a clearing, it would grow as timid blue-green stubble. Then, moving away from the tree, would get thicker and taller until it reached shoulder high in some places, where the separation between two trees was unusually large. The grass was a lighter, greener shade than the trees and vines. We changed the color of our suits to the bright green we had used for maximum visibility on Charon. Keeping to the thickest part of the grass, we were fairly inconspicuous. We covered over 20 clicks each day, buoyant after months under 2 Gs. Until the second day, the only form of animal life we saw was a kind of black worm, finger-sized, with hundreds of psyllium legs, like the bristles of a brush. Rogers said that there obviously had to be some larger creature around, or there would be no reason for the trees to have thorns. So we were doubly on guard, expecting trouble both from the Torrens and the unidentified large creature. Potter's second platoon was on point. The General Freak was reserved for her, since her platoon would likely be the first to spot any trouble. "Sarge, this is Potter," we all heard. "Movement ahead." "Get down, then." "We are. Don't think they see us." "First platoon, go up to the right of point. Keep down. Fourth, get up to the left. Tell me when you get in position. Sixth platoon, stay back and guard the rear. Fifth and third, close with the command group." 2 dozen people whispered out of the grass to join us. Cortez must have heard from the fourth platoon. "Good. How about you, first?" "Okay, fine. How many are there?"
8, we can see."
Potter's voice.
"Good. When I give the word, open fire. Shoot to kill."
"Sarge, they're just animals."
"Potter, if you've known all this time what a Torren looks like, you should have told us. Shoot to kill."
"But we need..."
"We need a prisoner, but we don't need to escort him 40 clicks to his home base and keep an eye on him while we fight. Clear?"
Yes, Sergeant.
Okay. 7th, all you brains and weirds, we're going up and watch. 5th and 3rd, come along to guard.
We crawled through the meter-high grass to where the 2nd platoon had stretched out in a firing line.
I don't see anything, Cortez said.
Ahead, and just to the left, dark green.
They were only a shade darker than the grass, but after you saw the first one, you could see them all, moving slowly around some 30 meters ahead.
Fire!
Cortez fired first, then 12 streaks of crimson leaped out, and the grass wilted black, disappeared, and the creatures convulsed and died, trying to scatter.
Hold fire! Hold it!
Cortez stood up.
We want to have something left. 2nd platoon, follow me.
He strode out toward the smoldering corpses, laser finger pointed out front, obscene divining rod pulling him toward the carnage. I felt my gorge rising, and knew that all the lurid training tapes, all the horrible deaths and training accidents, hadn't prepared me for this sudden reality, that I had a magic wand that I could point at a life and make it a smoking piece of half-raw meat. I wasn't a soldier, nor ever wanted to be one, nor ever would want.
Okay, 7th, come on up.
While we were walking toward them, one of the creatures moved, a tiny shudder, and Cortez flicked the beam of his laser over it with an almost negligent gesture. It made a hand-deep gash across the creature's middle. It died like the others, without emitting a sound. They were not quite as tall as humans, but wider in girth. They were covered with dark green, almost black fur, white curls where the laser had singed. They appeared to have 3 legs and an arm. The only ornament to their shaggy heads was a mouth, wet black orifice filled with flat black teeth. They were thoroughly repulsive, but their worst feature was not a difference from human beings, but a similarity. Whenever the laser had opened a body cavity, milk-white, glistening, veined globes and coils of organs spilled out, and their blood was dark, clotting red.
Rogers, take a look. Torrens or not?
Rogers knelt by one of the disemboweled creatures and opened a flat plastic box filled with glittering dissecting tools. She selected a scalpel.
One way we might be able to find out.
Doc Wilson watched over her shoulder as she methodically slit the membrane covering several organs.
Here.
She held up a blackish, fibrous mass between 2 fingers, a parody of daintiness through all that armor.
So?
It's grass, Sergeant. If the Torrens eat the grass and breathe the air, they certainly found a planet remarkably like their home.
She tossed it away.
They're animals, Sergeant. Just fucking animals.
I don't know,
Doc Wilson said.
Just because they walk around on all fours, 3s maybe, and eat grass.
Well, let's check out the brain.
She found one that had been hit in the head and scraped the superficial black char from the wound.
Look at that.
It was almost solid bone. She tugged and ruffled the hair all over the head of another one.
What the hell does it use for sensory organs? No eyes or ears or...
She stood up.
Nothing on that fucking head but a mouth and 10 centimeters of skull. To protect... nothing, not a fucking thing.
If I could shrug, I'd shrug, the doctor said. It doesn't prove anything. A brain doesn't have to look like a mushy walnut, and it doesn't have to be in the head. Maybe that skull isn't bone. Maybe that's the brain. Some crystal lattice.
Yeah, but the fucking stomach's in the right place, and if those aren't intestines, I'll eat...
Look, Cortez said, this is real interesting, but all we need to know is whether that thing's dangerous. Then we've got to move on. We don't have all...
They aren't dangerous, Rogers began. They don't...
Medic! Doc!
Somebody back at the firing line was waving his arms. Doc sprinted back to him, the rest of us following.
What's wrong?
He had reached back and unclipped his medical kit on the run.
It's Ho! She's out!
Doc swung open the door on Ho's biomedical monitor. He didn't have to look far.
She's dead.
Dead? Cortez said. What the hell?
Just a minute.
Doc plugged a jack into the monitor and fiddled with some dials on his kit.
Everybody's biomed readout is stored for 12 hours. I'm running it backwards. Should be able to...
There.
What?
4.5 minutes ago. Must have been when you opened fire.
Jesus.
Well?
Massive cerebral hemorrhage.
No. He watched the dials.
No warning, no indication of anything out of the ordinary. Blood pressure up, pulse up, but normal under the circumstances. Nothing to indicate.
He reached down and popped her suit. Her fine oriental features were distorted in a horrible grimace, both gums showing. Sticky fluid ran from under her collapsed eyelids, and a trickle of blood still dripped from each ear. Doc Wilson closed the suit back up.
I've never seen anything like it. It's as if a bomb went off in her skull.
Oh, fuck, Rogers said. She was Ryan-sensitive, wasn't she?
That's right.
Cortez sounded thoughtful.
All right, everybody listen up. Platoon leaders, check your platoons and see if anybody's missing or hurt. Anybody else in 7th?
I've got a splitting headache, Sarge,
Lucky said. 4 others had bad headaches. One of them affirmed that he was slightly Ryan-sensitive. The others didn't know.
Cortez, I think it's obvious,
Doc Wilson said,
that we should give these monsters wide berth, especially shouldn't harm any more of them. Not with 5 people susceptible to whatever apparently killed Ho.
Of course, goddammit. I don't need anybody to tell me that. We'd better get moving. I just filled the captain in on what happened. He agrees that we'd better get as far away from here as we can before we stop for the night.
Let's get back in formation and continue on the same bearing. 5th platoon, take over point. 2nd, come back to the rear. Everybody else, same as before.
What about Ho?
Lucky asked.
She'll be taken care of from the ship.
After we'd gone half a click, there was a flash and rolling thunder. Where Ho had been came a wispy, luminous mushroom cloud, boiling up to disappear against the gray sky.
Chapter 13. We stopped for the night. Actually, the sun wouldn't set for another 70 hours. Atop a slight rise, some 10 clicks from where we had killed the aliens. But they weren't aliens, I had to remind myself. We were. 2 platoons deployed in a ring around the rest of us, and we flopped down exhausted. Everybody was allowed 4 hours sleep and had 2 hours guard duty. Potter came over and sat next to me. I chinned her frequency. Hi, Mary Gay.
Oh, William.
Her voice over the radio was hoarse and cracking.
God, it's so horrible.
It's over now.
I killed one of them, the first instant. I shot it right in the...
I put my hand on her knee. The contact had a plastic click, and I jerked it back, visions of machines embracing, copulating. Don't feel singled out, Mary Gay. Whatever guilt there belongs evenly to all of us, but a triple portion for court.
You privates quit jawing and get some sleep. You both pull guard in 2 hours.
Okay, Sarge. Her voice was so sad and tired I couldn't bear it. I felt if I could only touch her, I could drain off the sadness like ground wire draining current. But we were each trapped in our own plastic world. Good night, William. Night. It's almost impossible to get sexually excited inside a suit, with the relief tube and all the silver chloride sensors poking you. But somehow this was my body's response to the emotional impotence. Maybe remembering more pleasant sleeps with Mary Gay, maybe feeling that in the midst of all this death, personal death could be very soon cranking up the procreative Derek for one last try. Lovely thoughts like this. I fell asleep and dreamed that I was a machine, mimicking the functions of life, creaking and clanking my clumsy way through a world, people too polite to say anything but giggling behind my back, and the little man who sat inside my head, pulling the levers and clutches and watching the dials. He was hopelessly mad and was storing up hurts for the day.
Mandela, wake up, goddammit, your shift.
I shuffled over to my place on the perimeter to watch for God knows what. But I was so weary I couldn't keep my eyes open. Finally, I tongued a stim tab, knowing I'd pay for it later. For over an hour I sat there, scanning my sector, left, right, near, far, the scene never changing, not even a breath of wind to stir the grass. Then suddenly the grass parted, and one of the three-legged creatures was right in front of me. I raised my finger, but didn't squeeze.
Movement! Movement!
Jesus Christ! There's one right...
Hold your fire, for shit's sake! Don't shoot! Movement! Movement!
I looked left and right, and as far as I could see, every perimeter guard had one of the blind, dumb creatures standing right in front of him. Maybe the drug I'd taken to stay awake made me more sensitive to whatever they did. My scalp crawled, and I felt a formless thing in my mind. The feeling you get when somebody has said something and you didn't quite hear it, want to respond, but the opportunity to ask him to repeat it is gone. The creature sat back on its haunches, leaning forward on the one front leg. Big green bear with a withered arm. Its power threaded through my mind, spider webs, echo of night terrors, trying to communicate, trying to destroy me. I couldn't know.
All right, everybody on the perimeter, fall back. Slow. Don't make any quick gestures. Anybody got a headache or anything?
Sergeant, this is Hollister. Lucky. They're trying to say something. I can almost... No, just...
All I can get is that they think we're, well, funny. They're not afraid.
You mean the one in front of you isn't...
No, the feeling comes from all of them. They're all thinking the same thing. Don't ask me how I know, I just do.
Maybe they thought it was funny what they did to Ho.
Maybe. I don't feel they're dangerous, just curious about us.
Sergeant, this is Bors.
Yeah?
The Torrens been here at least a year. Maybe they've learned how to communicate with these overgrown teddy bears. They might be spying on us, might be sending back...
I don't think they'd show themselves if that were the case, Lucky said. They can obviously hide from us pretty well when they want to.
Anyhow, Cortez said, if they're spies, the damage has been done. Don't think it'd be smart to take any action against them. I know you'd all like to see them dead for what they did to Ho. So would I. But we'd better be careful.
I didn't want to see them dead. But I'd just as soon not have seen them in any condition. I was walking backwards, slowly, toward the middle of camp. The creature didn't seem disposed to follow. Maybe he just knew we were surrounded. He was pulling up grass with his arm and munching.
Okay, all of you platoon leaders, wake everybody up, get a roll count. Let me know if anybody's been hurt. Tell your people we're moving out in 1 minute.
I don't know what Cortez had expected, but of course the creatures followed right along. They didn't keep us surrounded, just had 20 or 30 following us all the time. Not the same ones, either. Individuals would saunter away, and new ones would join the parade. It was pretty obvious that they weren't going to tire out. We were each allowed 1 stim tab. Without it, no one could have marched an hour. A second pill would have been welcome after the edge started to wear off, but the mathematics of the situation forbade it. We were still 30 clicks from the enemy base, 15 hours marching at the least. And though you could stay awake and energetic for 100 hours on the tabs, aberrations of judgment and perception snowballed after the second one, until, in extremis, the most bizarre hallucinations would be taken at face value, and a person could fidget for hours deciding whether to have breakfast. Under artificial stimulation, the company traveled with great energy for the first 6 hours, was slowing by the seventh, and ground to an exhausted halt after 9 hours and 19 kilometers. The teddy bears had never lost sight of us, and according to Lucky, had never stopped broadcasting. Cortez's decision was that we would stop for 7 hours, each platoon taking 1 hour of perimeter guard. I was never so glad to have been in the 7th platoon, as we stood guard the last shift, and thus were able to get 6 hours of uninterrupted sleep. In the few moments I lay awake after finally lying down, the thought came to me that the next time I closed my eyes could well be the last, and partly because of the drug hangover, mostly because of the past day's horrors, I found that I really didn't give a shit.
Chapter 14. Our first contact with the Torrens came during my shift. The teddy bears were still there when I woke up and replaced Doc Jones on guard. They'd gone back to their original formation, one in front of each guard position. The one who was waiting for me seemed a little larger than normal, but otherwise looked just like all the others. All the grass had been cropped where he was sitting, so he occasionally made forays to the left or right. But he always returned to sit right in front of me. You would say staring, if he had had anything to stare with. We had been facing each other for about 15 minutes when Cortez's voice rumbled, "All right, everybody, wake up and get hid." I followed instinct and flopped to the ground and rolled into a tall stand of grass. "Enemy vessel overhead." His voice was almost laconic. Strictly speaking, it wasn't really overhead, but rather passing somewhere east of us. It was moving slowly, maybe 100 clicks per hour, and looked like a broomstick surrounded by a dirty soap bubble. The creature riding it was a little more human-looking than the teddy bears, but still no prize. I cranked my image amplifier up to 40 log 2 for a closer look. He had 2 arms and 2 legs, but his waist was so small you could encompass it with both hands. Under the tiny waist was a large horseshoe-shaped pelvic structure nearly 1 meter wide, from which dangled 2 long, skinny legs with no apparent knee joint. Above that waist his body swelled out again to a chest no smaller than the huge pelvis. His arms looked surprisingly human, except that they were 2 long and under-muscled. There were too many fingers on his hands. Shoulderless, neckless. His head was a nightmarish growth that swelled like a goiter from his massive chest. 2 eyes that looked like clusters of fish eggs, a bundle of tassels instead of a nose, and a rigidly open hole that might have been a mouth sitting low down where his Adam's apple should have been. Evidently the soap bubble contained an amenable environment, as he was wearing absolutely nothing except his ridged hide, that looked like skin submerged too long in hot water, then dyed a pale orange. He had no external genitalia, but nothing that might hint of mammary glands. So we opted for the male pronoun by default.